Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. I hope everyone is staying safe and doing well in these challenging times. Today, I have the honor of talking to Jenny Stenhouse. Jenny has built voice experiences for many different platforms, including some really unique location-aware experiences on Samsung Bixby. And she's also the COO of Women in Voice. So I'm really excited to talk to Jenny about how she got started with voice, what she's built, and also about empowering women in voice and technology in general. Jenny, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Right. So like you said, I'm Jenny Stenhouse. I'm from New Zealand. I actually started my career a long, long time ago in the games industry. I didn't actually choose computer science. I kind of picked it at random. I wasn't originally going to go to university. So I had this wide selection of classes and took a CompSci 101 and really realized the amazing things that you can build with just a little bit of code. So I did a degree where I kind of pulled together subjects that I liked. So lots of design, computer science. I went down a graphics route there and computer vision. So I sort of structured the degree to be what I wanted. When I left university, I joined the games industry with a studio based in Wellington and worked there for a while and then got itchy feet and traveled for a while. I found myself eventually ending up in South Africa, where I worked on a film crew of all things, and I had a variety of jobs in between there, and you can't overestimate the importance of a variety of things. I've definitely learned a lot from all the different jobs I've had, including I've been a body piercer and a tattoo apprentice, and then I worked on this film crew, which was amazing. And then we moved back to New Zealand with my small family, and I had to sort of choose which direction I was going to go with my career, and I decided to pursue data science. But I took quite a few of those online courses and came across NLP, which I hadn't really, to be honest, encountered. And then from there, I found how easy it was to step into Alexa. And from Alexa, there's this, you know, like once you start looking, there's suddenly all this opportunity. And the gateway into it was simple. So I started off building skills for Alexa, and then I found Bixby and started building skills there. And then from there, it sort of just kept building, I suppose. I got invited to the Premier Developers Program with Bixby, and then there was the Dev Jam, which of course was quite inspirational to start pushing things out. Yeah, and there's just been so much to learn and to make and to do, that this constant learning curve I find really exciting.
Awesome. I think you have some really salient career advice in your introduction, in that you went and tried a bunch of different things. Yeah. And I think sometimes there's a tendency when people are young to, they just graduate and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm deciding my career. And I can tell you, I tried about 50 different things, maybe 50 is an exaggeration, my 20s, before I figured out exactly what I want to do. So I think that's really good. And I think it's good to travel and experience the world. It certainly makes you a more complete person. So back to talking about voice, though. So you said you started working with Alexa and did some things and have worked at Bixby. Why don't I bring you back to your first thing? What was the first voice experience you built?
Well, apart from like the traditional Hello Worlds, which I always tend to produce, my first published skill was called a mini moment of calm. So I've got small humans, and you tend to encounter lots of tantrums and not calm moments with small people. And so I actually made this as a tool for my daughter. And all you do is ask Alexa for a mini moment of calm, and she walks you through a technique to help you calm down and involving physicality. Because one of the things is, when you're trying to calm down a small human, obviously you're not always so calm yourself. So it was really good to have this thing to step out and do the heavy lifting for me. And it was novel for her. So it works really well. And I love data. So I hooked up an Airtable backend so I could do things like know when the user is a first time and onboard them and keep track of what techniques were being used again and again. And the user had the ability to mark one as a favorite. So it was like a small stepping stone, but it did sort of show me what was powerful. Like, as soon as you hook up a database, you suddenly have this whole nother level of interaction that you're able to provide.
Great. Yeah, mini moment of calm. That sounds like something that a lot of parents could use right now as we're all sitting at home with our children. And I don't know about you or the listeners, but our house seems a lot smaller than it used to. My family of four at home. And so I love experimenting with how can voice be help us in these kind of challenging and trying times. And that's a great idea. Mini moment of calm. So tell me a little bit more about it. Is it give the kid hints about how to be calm, or what? How does it work?
So I'll give you an example of one of the techniques. Uh-huh. So one of the techniques that we really like in this house is you rub your hands together and slowly increase it while you count to 10. So go faster and faster. And so the skill actually steps you through, you know, so place your hands together, take a deep breath and start rubbing. Okay, now start rubbing quicker. Okay, we're going to count to 10 and you have to be going really, really fast. At 10, you're going to put your hands over your eyes and tip your head down, supporting your head with supporting the weight of your head with your hands. And so then you place your hands over your eyes. And so there was a variety of them, and most of them were targeted to kids. There's lots of kids' yoga books and resources online, so I sort of pulled from all of those and gave them my own interpretation. And this was made before there was APL, so there were no visual assets at that point. But I am redoing it for Bixby, so there will be some more visuals and guidance from that perspective, so the calming mode and model.
Great. Yeah, you know what I like about that is you must know as a parent that sometimes if you ask your kids to do something, they ignore it. But if the third party may be a voice assistant, ask them or tells them to do something, the kids will definitely listen. So I can see how that could be super effective. Hey, so I wanted to ask you a few questions about what you built for Bixby, but let me back up a little bit. First started building for Alexa. When did you start building for Bixby, and what motivated you to try this new platform?
So it was quite a while ago. So I think the Bixby developers platform had just opened. So like 2 years or so, is that about right? Yeah. And basically when I realized that I could build stuff with voice interactions, I looked for every possible platform that I could build on and gave it a whirl. So it was actually it was on GitHub that I came across the capsule that you built for Bart. And I took that apart to build my Hello World. And so I did a Hello World and I left it at that for quite a while because coming from mainly doing Alexa and then moving to Bixby, there is quite a steep learning curve. But then I had lots of ideas and like I tend to keep ideas about general voice interactions and experiences rather than target them to a platform initially. So I returned to Bixby when I was contacted about the Premier Developers Program and I like jumped at the chance. I was very excited to be part of that. So when that came about, I started building my capsule, Sugar Sugar.
Okay. Tell me about Sugar Sugar. What does it do?
So my son has it's another idea that started off as a tool for personal use. And I think this is like where you get lots of ideas from, because the problems that you encounter, someone else is probably encountering them too. And so what I did with Sugar Sugar is my son has a brain abnormality and it causes his blood sugar levels to be way out of whack, as well as some other stuff. But that was one of the big problems. And as you can imagine, taking blood sugar readings from a 2.5-year-old is not fun. And then having to include as much data as possible about his general well-being and what he's eating and everything as well linked to these blood sugar entries was like, oh, it was so hard. So this was the perfect opportunity to use my skills to make something to actually help me. So Sugar Sugar pulls in a diary entry as well as the blood sugar level. And it also, one thing that was important for our experience was that my son's blood sugar normal range isn't what's on meters. So you usually get like a low level blood sugar meter and it says like 4 millimoles per liter is the low range. So my son's usual low operating range is like a 2.5. And that's fine. He's still okay then. But like if you enter that into a blood sugar meter, all the alarms go off. So it was great to enable something that wasn't constantly telling us that he was in major trouble when he wasn't. And so it collects this diary information next to the blood sugar level. And the best thing for me was I can then just send it off via the capsule to his healthcare practitioner. And so getting the data in the right, in front of the right person was the most important step in this. And for me not to have to spend my nights entering blood sugar, like taking it off a little meter and putting it into a spreadsheet for them.
That's awesome. So situationally, you definitely hands-free was exactly what you needed. You needed something voice-wise. I think people forget about this. There's so many times when voice is really, really the best medium because you're caring for children, you're cooking, you're busy doing something else, and either want some quick information, or in your case, you want to record something and you want to care for your kid, and there's a blood sugar meter there. And the last thing you need to do is you can't stop, right? And so you're right. Yeah. Otherwise, go read it off that tiny screen or just record it right then and there. You know, what I love is that you took practical, you had a practical challenge for yourself and built a solution for to solve your problem, and then went ahead and shared it with others. Because I actually find that the very best things people are build are things where they have a personal investment and a passion for them. Mm. And so you mentioned that, right? Go find what are your own challenges and go see, hey, can I build something? Can I use some kind of technology in this case to help solve that or make it a little easier to do? That's great. So that's sugar, sugar. And then I know that you've built several capsules that I'm very location aware. And I thought you did some interesting and unique things there. Can you tell me more about some of those capsules that you built?
Yep. So I really wanted to leverage the fact that Bixby makes it so easy to include location in your capsules. So I actually started exploring what I could do with location originally in a capsule called Joy Diary, which is a basic gratitude journal that you can then link your moments of joy to a specific space and share them publicly so that you'd be able to be in a spot and be like, give me the moments of joy from here, and then see how other people have experienced this location. I then, because I'd built that framework, I had to see how else I could use it. If you invest time in something, why not leverage it in another way? So I built Dropnote, which is essentially, I guess the simplest way to describe it is kind of like virtual graffiti. You can pin a note to a geographical location and you can make them public or private, and you can unlock the private ones with a key phrase. And you can, when you're creating drop notes, you can choose who you share this key phrase with. So you could send them directly the location and the key phrase from within the capsule, or you could maybe give them a puzzle to unlock it, or it's up to you to choose how you do it. So that's been really interesting. That's another way where you sort of have a thing that you've built and you put out there, and then I've been so surprised by how people are actually using it. Yeah, it's actually been blowing me away, because there's quite a few sort of like, as you expect, that I was here, which is like the placeholder text that I use. But that idea of leaving your tag, like there's lots of people's names, there's lots of the food is good here and things like that. There's even been one marking this area as COVID-free. So it's really interesting how people have been using it. But there has been some negative use of it. And so that's brought up some really interesting and important thoughts around like what we need to do as developers to ensure that what we create is beneficial to people, or allowing them to use it in a healthy or caring manner. And like, where is that line that we draw between ourselves and the users? So there's privacy and ethics and everything involved with it. But overall, it has been used in an interesting and positive way, and how users can take your creations in unexpected directions is always quite interesting. There's a couple of, I can see in the data that some people have laid out treasure paths and hunts and geocaching. And yeah, it's really exciting how people are using it.
That's awesome. You know, it's mentioned, you said, I think of treasure hunts, or do you call it treasure path? Maybe that's the New Zealand way of saying that. This immediate thing that I thought of when I saw it is, hey, I could make this really cool kind of treasure hunt for my kids or for another family, and then they could walk around and find things. Maybe a little less practical in the current time and frame, but you know, in the meta sense, you know, once we're beyond that, that'd be really interesting and cool. Almost like you're walking around, you could create a treasure hunt for people, or Well, I love that idea of you're walking around and maybe somebody sees something interesting or likes this restaurant and notes it verbally. That's a whole different way of taking notes or of location-aware information, right? It'd be interesting to walk around the city and listen to what other people said about areas of the city, especially if you were traveling somewhere new. It could be really, really cool.
Yeah, I quite like that idea that it could be a more serendipitous discovery of things that you like or navigating spaces. So one of the applications that I'm trying to pitch currently is that we have a lot of natural walks in New Zealand, and quite a few of those walks then have like historical or fauna and flora interests that are along the walk. Or like if you stand at this point and look this direction, you'll be able to see this landmark. That kind of guide, without having a physical guide there, has a lot of potential. And I think also like it might help people notice the little things, you know, like if you're walking along, but if you actually, if you crouch down at this point here and look under this log, you'll see this really rare fungi or something like that. You know, like there's so many different opportunities for its use. And because I've already got the framework now, so many directions it can be taken in. And I'm sure there'll be even more unexpected ways it could be used as well, which I believe is like an undertone for the whole of the voice industry, is that we probably haven't defined exactly how it's going to be used. And I think we will be surprised when the mainstream really adapt to it and start using it.
Yeah, isn't it one of the great things about this industry is it's so young and there's so many new ideas that you can come up with. Just as you're talking, I was thinking, hey, it'd be super cool. You get into some kind of touristy area, and sometimes they have those like audio guides, but those aren't location aware. They're like, okay, go and see this. I don't know, you're in Europe and see the amazing, beautiful 12th century church and walk down this cobblestone street and see this. But usually you have to kind of start and stop it. But he's super cool if it was location aware. It could tell you exactly what you were looking at and doing. Wow, you could do some really cool stuff with that engine you built. So all driven by voice. You're absolutely right. I mean, take some kind of underlying tech and some kind of underlying thinking about how something works, and you realize it's powerful, and maybe you build it for one purpose, but maybe there's 20 different things that people could do. Maybe there's 100 different things that people could do. You can think of 20, and the other 80 are open for people's creativity to build upon. So I love that. Location aware plus voice is a really good way to think about creative things. You certainly got my creative juices flowing just as we're talking here.
That's good. I love that. I think that's another really exciting aspect of the voice industry, is that having conversations like these and you're suddenly like, oh, we could totally build that. Or like, what if we hook in this API? Like I recently added what three words to the Dropnote backend. And that's also like quite cool. And like, what if you could explore the world from like, instead of you being moving about, what if you just want to move about the world in a virtual way, you know? So you could say, what's around these three words or things like that. Yeah, basically so many opportunities, and it's really exciting.
Great. Well, I'm super excited to hear what you build with this. There's a ton of opportunities there. Hey, so can I get back? I want to talk a little bit about the technology and Bixby. So you started with Alexa development, very code-driven framework, and then you moved to Bixby, which is really, really different. What was your experience like going from Alexa to Bixby?
So initially it was hard, but then once you, and I totally recommend people just to build, because I was like, I'm trying to figure it out before I actually started programming. And that change in thinking about going to modules and actions and having your code sort of separated out from the training and being able to have to think in this new manner was quite difficult. But then once you're there and you've got over it, it's suddenly so powerful and like so easy. And I love the fact that like, so training the model, I find like I really like doing it because I like finding out where I break it, because then you know where other people are going to break it too. And yeah, I just think that it is difficult. It's going to be hard to start with, but then once you're over that lump, there's so much that you can do.
Got it. So any advice that you'd give to new Bixby developers, maybe ones who already have had a background in more of a kind of a code-driven kind of procedural development model, and then they go to Bixby and go, oh my gosh, I got to create all these models.
Yeah. I quite like thinking of it in quite a spatial way. Like if you think of your modules as models as like the things you have on the table and like where you're going to move them to or what needs to be added to them, I think thinking about it in a spatial way really helps. That might be quite particular to my way of thinking, but that definitely helped me. And also the idea that what you want to do in your JavaScript or like where you want to go to from there, because that's something that I love about Bixby is that you can get to your JavaScript and then get out to another API really easily or pull in data from somewhere else, because it's hard to get away from the fact that content is going to be king. Like what you're actually bringing in and putting out to your user is what matters. And so being able to pull in really high quality content or create really high quality content and get it in front of the user is what's going to make the difference. So yeah, I like that pathway is quite clear and like the ability to build in your own library. So now that when I go to create a capsule, I instantly chuck in these libraries that I've built to access to Airtable. When I use Dashbot for reporting, I use their library that they provide. That's awesome. Yeah, so you sort of, as you develop more and build more stuff, you give yourself a little starting point every time. So yes, that first one is hard. Build a hello world. And then go from there. I mean, the thing that amazes me about like Bixby itself is I often go, oh, I want to be able to do this. Like, I can't think of a good example now. But like, say an interface thing or endpoint screen, I'm going to have to build that from scratch. But then you go look at the documentation and you're like, oh, that totally already exists. I just need to add one line of code to my input view. And so that's amazing. And the other thing about the documentation is definitely read it. It is good examples. And you'll come across things and you're like, oh, that sounds so cool. What can I create to leverage this? Which I also think is really exciting.
Oh, that's great advice. Yeah, start simple. It's funny you mentioned that GitHub Bart example that you started, that I posted as an article I wrote for VoiceBot. Before I joined Samsung, I was doing my own independent thing, and actually just before I joined Samsung, and boy, that took me a long time to do because I was still figuring out then. Now I could do that really easily, but like anything, you know, practice makes perfect, and kind of getting your head around how all the parts fit together and work together and that takes a little bit of time, and definitely how all those different models fit together. I certainly banged my head against the wall a few times when I first saw Bixby because it was really, really different from this kind of like code heavy, oh, well, just let me code it all, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no. This is a strongly opinionated framework that has these models that you need to fit together. An actual amount of kind of traditional code you write is a small fraction of what you'd write in more of a code heavy framework.
Well, and I think the other thing that's quite important is to remember that you can adjust your models as you go. Like, I know that I originally, when I started doing it, I was like, oh, I've got to really clearly define exactly what my model is going to be before I do anything else. But tweaking them as you go and adjusting them as needs arise isn't the end of the world. Like, I've definitely made so many changes as I go and then being like, oh, this is a way better way to do it. Like, I think that ability to recognize that you are going down the wrong path or that there is another way to do it, it's really good. Like, just because you start in one direction doesn't mean that you have to keep going down that path.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. There's a better way to do it. When I did full-time development, and that was my career for a while, I used to always joke, gosh, don't look at the code I wrote 6 months ago because I'll be embarrassed by it, right? Just because I think as you get, whatever you're working in, whatever framework, or whatever language, or whatever you're doing, as you get better and better at it, in some sense, you learn to utilize the platform more and more and write things in a simpler way. I should go look at that Bart code and I'll probably be embarrassed about a couple of things I did there, but that's okay. I mean, that's part of the whole learning process. And to my mind, one of the joys actually of being a developer is that you can constantly, there's always a new and different way and often better way to do things, and frameworks evolve. And so there's a lot of kind of both intellectual thinking and I think creativity.
Yeah, it is one of those roles where you can really like that's what I call it, creative problem solving, right? Because mm-hmm. you have to use everything to create the best path. Like it doesn't matter if it's something your kid said or you've heard in a podcast or whatever, there will be inspiration for working out a problem from all over the place.
Yep. Hey, so one of the things going to a bigger picture question that I think first time, particularly voice developers, have a challenge with, and you mentioned some of this, but is they ask themselves, well, what should I build? How do I get inspiration? How do you get your inspiration for what you build?
So from what I've mentioned so far is lots of my inspiration comes from problems that I personally encounter or problems that people I know have, and so that I want to build something to get that out. And then you find that other people have that problem too, and you can definitely use your user feedback. Like feedback from users is so important to iterate on what you make initially. And I really like the idea of the most lovable product or the MVP, and put just building something and getting it out there. So yeah, so there's lots of inspiration I get from obviously my personal life and my kids, and it may sound quite cliche, but like sci-fi and yeah, like the interactions from that you see in things like Minority Report and Black Mirror and all those, you know, cutting edge technology, and you're like, well, maybe what can I do now that's bouncing off those ideas? So yeah, I think talking to people in like all sorts of walks of life. I was speaking to someone at the supermarket and they had no idea what voice was. And then they suddenly realized that they could probably make their shopping list with voice. And you're like, oh, it's so new to so many people that there's ways that they're going to want to use it that we haven't even thought of yet. And tapping into that by talking to people is such a good opportunity. So I have like a notebook that I just constantly write ideas in. So I guess one of the problems I personally have, which I need to work on, is deciding which thing to build next, which is a good problem to have. So yeah, I think my advice would be just to look around, and there's some amazing podcasts to listen to, which I do quite a lot of, and like VUX World with Kane Sims is amazing. Kerry Roberts is like absolutely killing it at Inside Voice. And the other one, which I really like, is Ear Tech Radio. And I just have lost his name, Dave Kemp. And that, like, I'm so excited about sensors because of this podcast, that I love that thing of listening to something, or like it might be music or something you catch on TV, and having that sudden idea of like, oh, what if I could build that? Or like, what if you put this building block with that building block, and together they're going to be this new interaction? So yeah, I think it's just being open to ideas and not dismissing those weird ones. Like voice industry is definitely at a time where building that weird idea or that thing that you don't quite know how it's going to work or how people are going to use it, like now is the time, because there's so, like, I use free tiers for so much stuff. And so now is the time where you can get away with building that experimental idea on the free tier and just seeing how it goes. As long as you're willing to invest your own time and energy in it, then that's what your major cost is.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned you were talking, use your voice to talk about what to build with voice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the first way we were able to communicate, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe grunts and groans as a baby, right? I don't know if that's voice, but, you know, it's using our vocal cords at least. And so we learn to communicate the most, it's the most natural way to communicate. And now if you just go to someone and say, hey, instead of swiping or typing, you could talk to your machine, what would you like it to do? Or what would be a better or different experience than swiping or typing? Is a good way to think about it. And you're absolutely right. There's so much opportunity. And so there's a saying here. I live and work in Silicon Valley. There's no crazy ideas. There's no bad ideas. Mm. And venture capitalists like to say that. But they say that because there's so many things they passed on that ended up being amazingly successful ideas. And one of the things I know they look for is things that are a little bit kind of wacky and really, really hard. Because if it's really hard and a little wacky, sometimes it succeeds enormously, right? And really can be kind of change the way we interact with technology or how we do things. So yeah, there are no bad ideas. Go try it. Worst comes to worst, it doesn't work, but you learn something along the way.
Well, exactly. And maybe you'll find like you want to implement this crazy idea and it doesn't quite work out, but like one small section of it, like that might be the drop note example, is something that you can really reuse and build upon and explore in that direction further. But if you didn't build that weird idea in the first place, you wouldn't have found it. So yeah, I totally think weird is the way to go.
Absolutely. That'll be the tagline. Weird is the way to go. I love it. Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit and I want to talk about Women in Voice. I know you've been involved with that organization for some time and now you're the COO. Please tell our listeners about what is Women in Voice.
Okay, so Women in Voice is an empowerment organization for women and minority genders in the voice industry. So anyone who isn't represented or who isn't represented. So we aim to empower, amplify, and celebrate people in the voice industry. So that gives us lots of activities to do. We run a mentorship program, we build community, and we have global activities, but we also really encourage localization with our chapters. So it's really exciting. We have 10 global chapters in 7 countries at the moment with more on the way. Yeah, and they're all over the world. And so it's a really internationally diverse leadership team. And yeah, we're coming up to our 2nd year anniversary in August. Oh yeah, so it was founded by Joan Bajorczyk and she's based in Seattle. And she essentially went to a conference and realized that there was no one like her represented there. And that's really, really important to have representation. So she went home and she started Women in Voice and she reached out and gained this amazing group of international members. And it's just grown and grown from there. So, yeah.
Great. So tell me a little bit about, you said there's these local chapters. Are they in-person events? Do you meet virtually? What happens in these local chapters?
So currently, because of the global crisis that we're in, it's actually been pretty amazing. Everyone's really pulled together and we've switched to remote and we're having some more global events and it's just been so nice to feel so supported and know that there's people to reach out to. So there are virtual events at the moment, but generally the chapters have in-person events provided in their local areas and in their local languages, which is really cool. So it's sometimes feels that it's quite English-centric, but because of this localization, people are really able to come together and explore the voice industry in such a variety of ways. So yeah, there's chapter events. The chapters are run by local people. And so we're able to provide guidance and help them prosper and become sustainable. So yeah, it's all very cool.
Great. Yeah, I'm a big supporter of organizations like Women in Voice because I think it's so important to our society in general. You know, and one of the things that I've noticed starting this podcast, and this is actually episode 10, is it can be challenging to, I wanted my guests on the podcast to reflect both the gender and racial diversity that exists out in the world. And I started doing this and about, I don't know, episode 5 or 6, I was like, whoa, 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 I'm not doing that. And so I've really reached out to different people and tried to do that. But I'll tell you, it's hard sometimes, right? I mean, frankly, there aren't enough women in voice. What do you think we can do about that?
Well, I think that it's not just a matter of getting women into voice. It's also keeping them there. That's a major problem with the tech industry as a whole, is that although they might start off with having quite a, well, there is a growing number of women involved in STEM, but it's also maintaining them and keeping them. Because the thing is, if you don't have someone to look up to who is the same career path or trajectory as you want to aspire to, it makes it more difficult to get there yourself. And so, yeah, retaining women in an industry like this is so important. And I wish I had a silver bullet answer for this, you know, like, oh, we just need to do A, B, and C, and then the problem is going to be solved. And I mean, often people bring up things, you know, like having good maternity, paternity programs or equalizing pay is a major one, which these things would help. But it's also like there has to be a cultural shift. And that's so hard for all of us to do. It's not just a man thing, you know. It is something that we're all in together. So I think that it's this cultural shift that is the hardest thing to deal with. I mean, lots of women I've spoken to, they leave tech because they're burnt out, because putting up with this constant microaggressions is actually way more damaging than, I mean, not getting paid equally sucks, but also having to put up with this constant barrage of, and in most cases, people aren't even aware that they're doing it. Like from my personal experience, there's so much that happens as because that's the normal way or we're expected to behave it, that they don't even realize that it is having an impact. Or, yeah, it's just that constant chipping away that's the problem. And, of course, it's the hardest thing to change. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't. and finding small ways to change is the best way to do it. That means we can't, like, little stepping stones is all we need to do. And if everyone can do something small, that's going to lead to a much bigger cultural shift.
Yeah, that's interesting. All those kind of subtle biases that come through, even if people don't realize they are being biased, they are.
Yeah.
And I think we're all guilty of it. I'm sure I've been guilty of it and not been aware of it. Mm. And you also bring up another really powerful point that I've heard before is around the kind of the mentorship and the lack of, you said women may join the technology industry or join voice, but if there's a lack of mentors in there, and mentors are so, so important in careers to have someone to talk to and understand, you know, I'm in this tough situation. What did you do? Or I want to advance my career. How did you do that? Or understand it. Sometimes it's just a sympathetic ear. I think that's super important. It strikes me as potentially women in voice helps kind of foster some of that mentorship. Is that an inaccurate description, or is that?
Not at all. So we actually are enlarging our mentorship program this year. We currently have what has been called the Valentine's Day Mentor Matchup, where we've had an open call for mentors and mentees. And so the first year we ran it, we had, I think it was about 80 sign up. And this year we had 181 sign up. And so that equates to, and we offer it. So like if you sign up as a mentor, you can also be a mentee, because there is a distinct lack of mentors. And so I think being able to become a good mentor is also an aspect that we want to really support. So yeah, so 181 women signed up. That equates to, I think it worked out to be 120, 130 mentor-mentee matchups. And we had a Spanish language stream as well. So it's something that I'm particularly really passionate about, and I'm so excited that we have some initiatives in the works to expand this program, because yeah, it is about visibility and knowing that what the path you want to take is possible, and like someone before you has gone, and it's hard to be that first person to lead the way. And so if we can support that person to get to their goals, that means that we're also making a path for the people behind them as well. Right. So yeah, it's a really, I mean, it's so nice to hear how life-changing some of these matchups have been. Like, it's just such a good feeling to know that you've connected people and that they've had such a mutually beneficial experience. Because I think that is something that when people hear about mentor programs, is that something like, oh, I'm going to have to give all my time, it's going to be really soul-sucking. But the way that we try and frame it is that it is for both the mentor and the mentee, that you can learn from each other. So yeah, it's been really successful, and I look forward to next year.
That's awesome. Yeah, it struck me as you're kind of talking about, hey, if you're new in this, it's almost if you're a, I don't know if the right word is pioneer, but a pioneer here helps lead the way to the next group of pioneers and people.
Yeah, definitely.
There. So this is a big challenge, not just in voice, but in the tech industry in general, has been, you know, kind of overly, very, in some cases, extremely male dominated. Do you have any other ideas about what we can do or how society needs to change to kind of address this and change this kind of imbalance, which frankly makes no sense, except it is what it is right now. What do we do to change it?
Well, I think one of the major things that I think is really important is, like, if you see something that you feel is a bias, or that, like, even if it's that the girl in the room is always the one to go get the coffee, like as a really cliched example, say something, because the more that we talk about it, the more we can do to change it. Like, it's that thing of standing up against those small aggressions and making it okay to discuss, because I know that this is definitely a topic that gets people's backs up. Lots of people feel, I don't think attack's the right word, but maybe defensive about when you say, oh, I'm from Women in Voice. Some people are like, oh, so where's the Men in Voice org? Well, currently, that's everywhere. You know, like everything is the men's org of this. And I mean, I would love this to be a world where Women in Voice doesn't have to actually exist. But currently we're not there yet. And I think it's those little steps. Like, it doesn't have to be hard, but you do have to be prepared to be a little vulnerable. Like, someone might call you out on your actions. And instead of getting your back up, maybe if people can just take a wee moment and think, oh, yeah, maybe I am doing that. Well, that means next time maybe you won't, you know. Mm-hmm. And, yes, standing up for each other I think is really important. And learning how, like, as a woman to empower other women, because I know if you've come through the tech industry and really had to battle, sometimes it can feel that you're quite alone and that you are, because you've had to be, constantly defensive, that you might maintain that for anyone who's coming in and needs a hand up or help. And so being able to relax and perhaps be a bit vulnerable is a good way to start this change. And the thing is, like I said before, if everyone can make a little change, it will lead to big things. And that ability of being open and prepared to discuss it and without having to have your feelings directly hurt, you know, like if we could discuss this without people being offended, it would enable us to make better change, right? Like, it's because it's quite a volatile discussion that you can, it's easy to stop listening early on. But if you can just take a step back from like how you feel initially, then it may lead to better things.
That's great. You know, this is something I feel really passionate about this. And one of the things that drives that passion is I have two teenage daughters. And I see some of the bias that kind of directs them to do this versus that. Particularly my younger teen is really interested in technology. And I've really tried to encourage that and showing her and had her like develop little silly things and play. You know, we sat together and did some daddy-daughter kind of projects with electronics. And she really enjoys it. But I've already started to see kind of societal biases kind of like push her away from that. And I don't see them all, except I see her kind of, I don't know if I'm so interested in that anymore, which may or may not be true, but I think society is pushing kids that way. You know, I always tell my kids, hey, don't ever let anyone else tell you you can't do something. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go and try something, decide it's not for you or you don't want to do that, but that's your own personal decision. Don't mm-hmm. let someone else make that decision for you. Because frankly, in my opinion, you can do anything you want. You can try anything you want. You may not be good at everything, but go try it and experience it and go do it. And, you know, don't let others or society tell you you can't do it. I think it's interesting because it starts at a young age, even in our schools, a little bit around. I think about some stories I've heard about math class and how they treat boys different than girls in math mm-hmm. class. And it's subtle, but it plays in people's minds and starts having them develop in a certain way.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that sometimes subtle is way more dangerous because you don't, like, if someone stood in your face and said, oh no, your daughter can't do that, then you get up about it, you know, like you can have a visceral reaction to that. But if it's little things like on TV, your daughter never sees girls coding or girls coding in a realistic way, or she never sees a girl like a leadership position in a tech company. Yeah, so I think that representation is really important. And yeah, I know, I even see it with my five-year-old. Like, she's super into maths, but like even the boys in her class are like, oh, you're not, girls aren't good at maths. And it's like, well. And she's also already encountering this thing of she has to do it just right. It has to be perfect. And I think that's like a lesson that we often tell girls is that you have to be perfect. Well, we tell boys you have to be brave. And I think that that idea of being brave means that you're allowed to fail more. And I really think that talking about the things that you fail at is really important. And like women tend to skip that over. Like we don't talk about our failures because we're not meant to. We're meant to be perfect all the time. And I just think that there's so much learning missed out on because we don't discuss what goes wrong. And I really, it's something that I talk to my daughter a lot about, just give it a try. And yes, you may fail. Like, giving that idea that everything's going to work out is also not great. I think it's important to have the idea that, yes, you're going to fail. But if you fail, what are you going to learn from that? It's totally okay to make mistakes. But identifying what went wrong and how you can do better next time, maybe, that's also really important.
Wow, yeah, I think that's a powerful message. And it's certainly contrary to kind of traditional parenting, is the idea of it's okay to fail. I don't know where I was listening to a podcast a couple months ago, and it was this incredibly successful family. Like, the parents are successful, and I think it was three daughters, and they're all like amazingly successful. And I guess at dinner table, they'd have conversations around, how did you fail today? What didn't succeed? And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was not how I was raised.
No.
Powerful way of thinking about the world is about what did you try, what didn't work, and what did you learn from it? That's really amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting way to think. I mean, and I like that from a business perspective as well. Like, because then you can identify what works and what doesn't work. Why keep doing something if it doesn't work? And that facade of it all working all the time is just unrealistic. And it's so tiring trying to fit into an unrealistic view all the time. And I just think that your energy can be spent in such better ways, like making more capsules or building more stuff.
Got it. Hey, so Women in Voice, if people are listening to this and want to learn more or get more involved, what's the best way to do this? I'll obviously put these in the show notes, but I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, so one of our projects this year, we've just rebranded. So from like a grounds up perspective, we want diversity and inclusion. So we felt that our old logo wasn't quite doing that. So we had a rebrand, which has been really cool. I was really pleased to be involved with that. And we learned a lot throughout that. And so now we are pushing out a new website currently, which should be ready in a couple of weeks. And we will be pushing that on our social medias. So we are on Facebook at Women in Voice Women in Voice Tech on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And I'm always glad to hear from people, so they can email me at jenny@womaninvoice.org. And yeah, because I think that's another thing as organization, we might not be thinking like covering everything. Like, if you have an idea about how you can be helped, or you might have ideas about things that are missing from other places, like a webinar you really need, or like a program that would really help, well, then tell us about it. We'd like to think that we can think of lots of opportunities and options, but having even more in the mix is a good opportunity. So yeah, please, if you're interested in starting a chapter, reach out. There's so many activities going on that we'd love to have more people involved.
Oh, it sounds like an amazing organization, and I encourage listeners to go investigate more and to join it or support it. And may you succeed, because it's so, so important. Hey, I want to switch gears and jump back and talk a little bit about voice again, and talk about the future of voice. And first thing I want to talk to you is more of a Bixby-specific question. So Bixby is on most Samsung smartphones now, but you can currently develop for TVs, watches, and smart appliances. And later this year, we'll be opening a marketplace for all those devices, which opens up new and different ways of interacting with voice on different devices. What should those devices get you excited, and why?
So I am so excited about watches and probably earbuds. They're quite close together. So as you probably have gathered, I'm a massive fan of data. And having, like, once those data streams, like having your heart rate available to a Bixby developer, I think there's just such exciting things around that you can do. And the location-aware aspect of it. Yeah, but a one-inch screen, that's definitely a visual challenge from a design perspective. But I'm also really excited because with Bixby, there's such a range of devices. Like, how can interactions work across all of these devices but together? So, and like, not just squishing it or making it really huge for a TV or whatever, but like that idea, I have this like pie in the sky idea of like a game where if you're playing it on the TV, the experience is quite different than if you're playing it from your watch. So like, if you're on the TV, you might be like the base commander or the station commander, while on the watch, you're like the trooper on the ground. And so like different experiences linked in, and different on different devices. Yeah, I mean, who's going to come up with the MMO of voice?
Right. Right. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I really like that idea of like running raids, but you are actually running the raid and your cohort is like distributed globally. I think there's just so much opportunities of having like an overarching experience that is then sort of adjusted to which device you're coming from or your location and where you're coming from. So yeah, I think that's super exciting.
Interesting. So you're not just squishing the experience or expanding the experience from a UI perspective, but you're kind of saying, hey, on a watch, what I do in, let's say, a game and how I do it is probably, and this makes a lot of sense, is very different than how I do it sitting on a couch looking at my TV, which might be really different than me walking around with my mobile phone and using it. Yeah, wow. That's really thought compelling and interesting of make the kind of context of where you are, location, and what device you are on have a big influence in how you play or how you experience something. Boy, you start out location aware and got me all excited. Now you got me all excited about these different devices and things. But that's super fascinating to think of the different devices and different experiences, because you're right. It's not about squishing an experience or making it a good experience on a 50-inch screen. The experience on a 50-inch TV may be very different, or you may play something or play a different role than you do on a 1-inch watch screen when you're walking around.
Yeah, it's that idea of the situational awareness. So it's, content, situation, location, all working together, and then taking the best aspects of all of those. Like, why try and force a visually compelling experience on a watch when the watch isn't for a really intricate visual interaction? Like, leverage what is good about each device.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is super fascinating. Boy, you could build some really cool stuff there. I'm excited.
It's exciting.
To see
what you build. Yeah. I know. That's why I love conversations like this. You're like, oh, but what if I build that thing? Or I can include this aspect. And yeah. So my list is getting longer and longer.
My list is getting longer and longer. We'll have to collaborate on something or figure that out. Hey, voice in general, what are you excited about in the near term? In something that's happening in the next year or so?
I'm excited about the inclusion of more languages. I think that's really exciting. And the penetration into other cultural aspects, like if you can include language X, then maybe there's a new way of interacting that's really common there. I also feel like having some minority languages represented would be really useful. I can remember when I first heard about voice, one of the things I really wanted to, I was still in South Africa. So I was working for a South African forestry company, and one of the problems they encountered is literacy rate among their ground workers. So the people who are literally on the ground doing pruning, thinning and spraying and that kind of aspect. And of course, all of that stuff is really safety oriented, but they found that people were just, ticking the box and crossing the checklist without actually understanding what that meant. And so being able to provide that checklist and the affirmation that they've understood in their own language is super powerful. Like, that would actually have a major impact on their safety rates. So I think the inclusion of minority languages, particularly for that sort of aspect. And I think that voice has this amazing opportunity to really enable people who may suffer from illiteracy this step up. And that's another thing that might not fit in this section, but there's also the inverse of that is like how voice is going to become a totally accepted form of interaction and expected form of interaction. What do we do about those people who don't speak clearly or can't speak? So my son is nonverbal.
I think you're so spot on around in the developing world, what not only an enabling, but an empowering technology voice can be. Right? To take literally it's billions of people who otherwise have not been able to interact with technology because technology often requires the ability to read. But if you can talk to your technology, then you start unlocking it. And I think there's just incredible opportunities there. And likewise, really good question too, on the reverse, is if someone cannot speak or they're deaf, where do they fit and how does this work in this increasingly voice-driven world? I think that's a really, really good question. I don't think we have really any good answers for it right now, but it's a good question to start asking.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. Like all of these hard questions about ethics and privacy and how we're going to, you know, enable all sorts of people to operate in the voice world. We need to start asking them now when the industry is young, rather than thinking of them 10 years down the track and being like, oh, so now how are we going to build in this accessibility, or how are we going to add this as an afterthought? It means if we build it in, it is going to be beneficial for everyone. And it's just discussions and talking and coming up with ideas that needs to happen. And luckily I find that the voice first community, or the voice community, is really into talking about it. So yeah, I think that it's just conversations that need to just keep happening and happen in an open manner. I think the other thing that I'm really excited to see about that will probably happen in the next year or so is like the social aspect and user-created content on voice. Like, it's got to come, right? Like, it's definitely, and it comes with a whole set of problems, but I think that's really exciting. Like, how are people going to be sharing and interacting with each other in a social way on voice? Not like, I don't think we're looking for like the next TikTok or like what the Instagram voice is. I think it will be something different. And I think that sharing of snippets of audios, of podcasts, or of each other is going to be something really exciting to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. There is some super interesting things yet to be discovered there. Hey, so broadening out the time frame to say 5 or even 10 years, where would you like to see voice go in, say, 5, 10 years? You choose the time frame.
Maybe, yeah, let's say like 10 years. I'm going to start with what I don't want to see. So I really, really hope that it's not this like just inundation of ads and, you know, literally like what a free website looks like. Is that what we're going to be hearing? Or, you know, like I'm sure you've seen things like Minority Report and Black Mirror, where as you walk down the street, you have ads talking to you and interjecting into your life, like this really overwhelming soundscape. I like to think of it that hopefully we're heading in the direction of more like a curated soundtrack. So when I was a kid, it's that thing of in movies, if something bad happens, the music slightly preempts this bad thing. So maybe that will start happening with like looming deadlines. You won't quite hear the Jaws theme tune, but maybe instead of being just told, you know, like I get a pop-up to say that I have a meeting in 15 minutes, maybe some subtle music will come in. Or I think that there's amazing ways that audio can be used along with voice to sort of process and help deliver just the massive abundance of data that we're going to have at our fingertips. Like, it's all good and well having all this data available, but how do we actually utilize it? How do we process it in a way that is beneficial to our daily lives? Like, I quite like the idea of instead of navigating a space by, you know, turn left here or turn right here, you've reached your destination. Maybe those cues are much more subtle audio cues, like a soft ping that you should be moving left, or a trill that when you arrive at your location. I definitely think that there'll be more personalization because we're going to be hitting generations of kids who have grown up with Alexa or Bixby or this idea of assistant in home. I like that way out idea of having a constant, like a companion versus an assistant who helps you with things. And hopefully they are not all feminine voices. This is a big problem. There have been, you know, there's projects around to remove this idea of the assistant always having to be female. So, yeah, I think that they'll become more personalized. And I like the idea of interaction between assistants. So asking your assistant to do something, you might not know exactly what steps they take, but they might go through other services or other people's assistants to bring back information to you. There's this really good book called A Diamond Age by Neil Stephenson. And that was one of the books that even when I started my games career, it was like, this is what I want to build. I want to build this. It's called A Primer, which is a book / audio interface that leads the heroine through all sorts of learning tasks and navigating life problems, and basically helps you with lots of situations. Anyway, it's essentially a multimodal experience, and that's what we kind of have the ability to start building now. So I think that idea, yeah, of companions and accessing data in a, oh yes, so getting the useful parts of data and maybe not in the expected way that we do now, really utilizing sound as a method to get information to you.
Interesting, yeah. So augment, I mean, it's so visual now.
Yeah.
But yeah. Sound is really a powerful, it's very powerful. I mean, why do we like music?
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Music is very powerful and very emotional to us. And you're absolutely right. The tone of the music can imply an emotion. But yeah, use that to convey data or information or emotion. And then as well, I love the idea of a companion as something more than, let's face it, we're at the, I call it the bark command stage. We bark commands at our voice assistants and they do one thing. But get them to do more richer tasks and complete more complex things for us, or actually be, you know, some kind of companion. I know there's a lot of studies with older people who actually use voice assistants as companions. And I think there's a lot of powerful things that could happen. I love that vision. Getting back to you, Jenny, what about in the near future for you for 2020? What are Jenny's plans for 2020?
Right. So obviously there's lots going on with Women in Voice. And so that's really exciting. We are, like I said, there's a new website coming out. We're enlarging our mentorship program and hopefully welcoming many, many more chapters, as well as global events like webinars and other online learning opportunities. So there's that aspect that's really exciting. I've also started my own small company here in New Zealand called Talking Tools, where I hope to build out more interesting experiences, and we'll be focusing on Bixby for those to start with. It is just me, but I'm very passionate, so I tend to get stuff done. And yeah, I just really want to build more things. I really love exploring the space. So I think it's going to be busy, but I'm really excited about it.
I would say you're not only passion that comes through, but also your creativity comes through. And that's a great combination. So, hey, you built several different voice experiences. Can you tell me about a voice experience that you haven't built that you particularly enjoy?
So I should actually apologize to Nick Schwab, because we're probably responsible for like his massive streaming. We use his sleep sounds literally all night, every night. Yeah, that's probably the one that gets the most use at our house. We do play a few games with Alexa currently, but I'm still really hunting for that standout skill or that standout experience. And so we do try lots of different stuff. We still use like the inbuilt stuff like timers and lists a lot. So yeah, I'm excited to see what more will come. Like I say, I really think that we haven't discovered that capture or skill or whatever that is really going to pull people to voice. I'm so excited to find out what will cause people to change from a website, that they'll choose to use voice over visiting a website or their phone. Like, what's going to be that skill that causes that mass adaptation? And I mean, maybe it is going to be social, maybe it is going to be this massively multiplayer game, or I definitely feel like that wave is coming of that thing that people will switch to voice from another method of interaction. And that's just a very cool place to be in, I think.
Yeah. So Nick Schwab should send his S3 hosting bills to you.
Definitely not. That must be huge.
No, but yeah, that's a really good salient question. When is the tipping point?
Yeah.
Right? And I agree with you. We haven't reached that tipping point. It's fun, and there's some cool things that you can do with voice, and there's some unique things you can do with voice. But I think we still reach for our phone or jump on our laptop more than we need to. And where's the tipping point where voice becomes the better way to do it? And maybe that's yet to be discovered and delivered. Hey, Jenny, so if people want to keep in contact with you, what's the best way to do so?
You can find me on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Twitter. My Twitter handle is a bit weird. It's Illex, which is an artifact from my game design days. But so that's Illinx. But you can put it down in the show notes, or please reach out to me at Jenny@womaninvoice.org. And yeah, like I say, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, and I'm always happy to hear from people, whether it's for collaboration or they want to get involved in Women in Voice. I love talking about voice, so I'd be happy to talk more.
Great. And I will put all of those in the show notes. Hey, Jenny, really, really been a pleasure talking to you. I love talking to you about, you know, how you got started in voice and what you've built. And then we shifted gears completely and talked about women in voice and empowering women, which I think is so, so critically important. It's truly, truly been a pleasure. I think you and I could probably talk for 3 or 4 hours, but that would be the world's longest podcast. So yeah. I'm going to not make our listeners do that and say thank you so, so much for your time today.
Thank you for your time. You will have to book in an occasion where we can just have a discussion.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you. And that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.